For nearly six centuries, the Frankfurt Book Fair has attracted authors, publishers, and agents. Soon after Gutenberg invented the printing press in 1439 near Frankfurt, the first book fair was held by local booksellers. Until the end of the 17th century, it was the most important fair of its kind in Europe. Following the end of World War II, the Frankfurt Book Fair was revived in 1949, and it has regained its title as the world's largest trade fair for books. For 5 days, more than 7,000 exhibitors from over 100 countries take part. And taking part and calling in today on our special edition of Beyond the Book is Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly's Features Editor. Andrew, welcome, and so happy to have you join us from Frankfurt.
Hey, Chris. Greetings from Germany.
Well, greetings right back to you. You know, we've begun this special feature we call PW's Week Ahead, and this is our first chance to get you on location. I understand you're there in the hall at the American Collective stand.
That's right. Calling you from Hall 8 at the Frankfurt Book Fair.
Well, what's it been like so far? What kind of level of activity are you seeing?
You know, it's been a rather subdued show on the show floor, at least. I think the traffic, most people would say, has been relatively slow. You know, perhaps it's the economic uncertainty that's in Europe right now. Maybe that's a reason why it feels a little slow. Maybe there's just not as many people here. We haven't seen the official numbers yet, so we don't know. There was also the threat of a German air controller strike, and maybe that scared some people from coming at the last minute. But that's now been averted, we think. There's been some random BlackBerry outages, which has made coordination a bit challenging. So perhaps people are huddled in front of more solid internet connections. But all in all, the fair organizers have done a great job yet again. It's been a solid program, and they always do a great job of managing all these things that are really sort of out of their control. The Wright Center, on the other hand, I will say, has been brisk. My colleague Rachel Deal has been reporting on that from the start of the fair. We're just seeing a ton of deals. You know, we still don't have that big book of the fair we always seem to be waiting for, but I also think it's time we stopped expecting that. You know, in the digital age, those kinds of major announcements seem like a bit of a relic.
Well, you know, Andrew, I think that's a terrific point, and ironic. You mentioned the outages for BlackBerry. I've heard that started to be called the BlackBerry crumble, and you know, so it points out the reliance on technology. And from what I read about Frankfurt Book Fair, it's as much a technology show today as it is a publishing show.
Yeah, I did a session today with Terry Nealon from Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, and you know, he sort of whispered into the mic that they shouldn't call it a book fair anymore. And you know, that was like heresy to say that, but it is very much becoming a content fair, a story fair, very much about stories, and it's very much focusing on digital.
Well, you know, to the point though about what kind of stories, there is still, you know, the best writing out there deserves prizes, and I understand there's been some talk about a new literary prize.
Yeah, that's kind of been the little scuttlebutt on the fair floor today. You know, people have. It's a little conversation piece, but there was, I think it was Andrew Kidd of Aiken Alexander as the spokesman. A group of agents and publishers announced a new literature prize, and they took some shots at the Man Booker Prize. You know, they announced that their reward was going to establish a clear and uncompromising standard of excellence.
Exactly. I mean, you say that with not exactly a serious tone, clear and uncompromising standard of excellence. It just sounds like one more
prize.
I've
never met a standard of excellence that could not be compromised.
That's right. Well, the other sort of accompanying conference, there's several, I suppose, publishers' launches out there, but the O'Reilly Tools of Change sets up alongside Frankfurt Book Fair, and some things there you took note of.
That's right. It's the day before. Now, this is the third year that the O'Reilly Tools of Change has led into Frankfurt. So people are coming. It was another sold-out, jam-packed show. And it really set a bold tone for the program once again this year. This is a show where people really are sort of challenged to think about publishing. You know, I hate to use the term outside of the box, but definitely outside the covers, at least, shall we say. The keynoter this year was Bob Stein, who's the director for the Institute for the Future of the Book. And Bob really pushed his view of the future, which is the networked book, which is the idea of turning reading from a solitary pursuit into a social activity where all your friends and everybody can be online in your book with you. Now, it doesn't mean they have to be. People like to read alone. Reading is a solitary activity, so they can still read on their own if they'd like. But it's a fascinating idea because in the physical world, you buy a book, you put it on your shelf after you read it, and there it sits. But in the digital world, when you buy an ebook and it sits on your digital shelf, imagine cracking that book open, that ebook open, months, years later, and find that it's been updated with conversations and new people reading it or new scholarship, and publishers having the ability to, you know, sort of upsell people new things that might add on to that book or new authors. You know, you publish a book and you sell an object. You publish an ebook and you have a chance to have a relationship with the book buyer and actually create a place online where value can be exchanged.
Well, so I'm sorry, but I was thinking that that's a pretty exciting vision. I always worry when I hear about people who are, you know, from the Institute for the Future and so forth. And that does sound like a, you know, a kind of fascinating way that the book can be complemented with all these other aspects. But he made another sort of sobering point about the value of content.
Absolutely. You know, Stein told everybody in attendance that as the value of content approaches zero, which is something that they don't like to hear, that content might approach zero in value. But as the value of content approaches zero, people will pay for context and community. And I think that's a very valid point.
Well, again, it's a vision we'll have to sort of wait and see like everybody else. You also heard from Mitch Joel at the same show, the Tools of Change Conference.
Mitch Joel is sort of a marketing guru today. He's a force of nature, actually. And he had some pretty strong words for publishers. He said they are definitely in a revolution. And he urged them to what he says, reboot, control, alt, delete, and sort of reboot. And, you know, he looks at social networks and the impact of tablet and smartphones and things like Amazon Prime. And he says that the world is turned now into virtually a world of impulse buys. And that's what consumers are coming to expect. And so he urged publishers to break this mass media mindset where they just, you know, push these objects out sort of randomly to as many people as possible via, you know, ads, and to take advantage of the real interactions between real people. He said it's a new opportunity to sort of take advantage of word of mouth, which has always been the best way to sell anything.
Well, there was a CEO panel, and they weren't talking so much about revolution as a kind of grounded in reality picture of the industry today.
Yeah, that's right. At the CEO panel at the Frankfurt Book Fair, we didn't get one of these visionary sort of evolution or revolution sessions. We got a really solid and much needed look at what the sort of global marketing outlook is, and a global marketing outlook. And, you know, we're talking about Asia, China, all these places that we don't often, you know, think about. The session was entitled New Horizons in Global Publishing, and it was based on the French trade publishing journal Livre Hebdo's 2011 global ranking. The good news is that the 87 publishing companies that comprise those rankings made up about $80 billion in sales last year, and the industry seems to have stabilized after the financial crisis of 2008. It featured Penguin CEO John Mackinson, Hachette Livre CEO Arnaud Nouri from France, Yu Chengqi, who's a Chinese educational publisher, and Oleg Novikov, who's the CEO of a Russian publisher called Exmo, that's one of the largest publishers in the world. And it was led by the group of four people, including George Slowick from PW, who each took a chance asking questions. And the big question they all asked was, you know, is the book industry declining? And Mackinson said no. It depends on you how you define a book. If we're talking about physical books, then, you know, maybe yes. But if you look at the consumption of media, things are not decreasing at all. In fact, they're increasing.
Well, that's a point you've made from time to time, really, that the whole definition of what's a book and what the reading experience is a moving target right now.
That's absolutely right. And I think Mackinson has a point. I think what we really also saw in this panel was that the ebook is, you know, they're way behind in Europe. In France, the revenues from ebooks are around 0%, according to Nouri. In Germany, they're, you know, a couple of percent. In the UK, it's up to 10% now. But in the US, we're, you know, getting to be over 20%. So it'll be interesting to see how Europe follows the US once e-readers and the Kindle store and all of those things sort of ramp up.
Well, I did see briefly that there was some news from Kobo. They are moving into some of those markets you mentioned. So I would expect by Frankfurt Book Fair 2012, it'll be quite a different story indeed.
Ebooks are coming.
There's no stopping them. Well, you've got a few other things coming out in PW this week. Tell us briefly about those.
Yes, that's right. Also on Monday's issue, we have our quarterly supplement, PW Select, which focuses on self-published authors. And it features, you know, paid listings, about 125 books this time around, and also PW reviews of selected titles. PW contributing editor Nancy Pearl weighs in with her monthly column on the state of the, and this week she talks about the state of book reviews and book coverage in general. And she offers her current list of books to read before you die. I've read most of them, but I hope to stay alive a little bit longer.
Well, we hope so too, Andrew, of course.
Our retailing page looks at how St. Louis indie booksellers are starting to fill in the gaps caused by the closure of 9 area border stores. And we have a few graphs on second quarter trends. And I'll give you a graph, or excuse me, a hint on what they show, ebooks.
Ebooks, ebooks, ebooks. That does seem to be the theme. Andrew Albany's PW Features Editor reporting to us from the American Collective stand in Hall 8 at the Frankfurt Book Fair. Andrew, thanks as always.
Thanks again, Chris. Great to be here.
Now I want to turn to Rose Fox, a PW Reviews editor who speaks to us today from Publishers Weekly's offices in New York City. Rose blogs at Genreville, and welcome back to Beyond the Book, Rose.
Thank you. I'm actually literally speaking to you from Andrew's office since he's out of town. I figured I would sit in his comfortable chair.
Well, lucky you and lucky him to be in Frankfurt, I suppose, although it's a busy place this week for everyone in publishing. Let's start off with something special that's coming up in PW next week in the reviews section. There are some reviews of self-published books.
That's right. This issue is our fall PW Select issue, which includes reviews of self-published books that were submitted through the PW Select program. And there's quite a range, including fiction and nonfiction and books for kids and adults. We also have a profile of one of the PW Select reviewed authors, Jane Ward, the author of the novel The Mosaic Artist.
And what about the regular reviews section? What's coming out there this week?
In fiction, we have an interview with Naomi Benaron, whose book Running the Rift we reviewed a couple weeks ago. There's also a highlighted review of Barrett Hathcock's The Portable Sun, a captivating debut collection of 9 linked stories that reads almost like a novel. In the mystery and thriller section, we have a glowing review of Slash and Burn by Colin Cotterill, the 8th and probably final mystery starring Dr. Siri Paibun, a coroner in Laos.
Wow, Slash and Burn. Well, there are some thriller elements in the other genres you cover as well.
That's right. In science fiction, fantasy, and horror, we have The Emperor's Knife by Mazarkus Williams, a debut fantasy novel set in an empire where assassinations and intrigue are the norm. And in romance, we highlight Mary Burton's Before She Dies, a top-notch romantic suspense novel that includes some terrifying scenes from the perspectives of a serial killer. On the lighter side, our comic section singles out The Man Who Grew His Beard by Olivier Chouin, a collection of stylistic experiments that connect the previous age of comics with the contemporary world. Our children's book section highlights 3 reviews of poetry collections that emphasize the everyday pleasures of family and reading. This week, we also have a children's religion section, which includes a review of Josephine Nobisso's Francis Woke Up Early, a story about young Francis of Assisi, with exquisite paintings by noted illustrator Maureen Hyde, her first publication in more than 2 decades.
In the nonfiction section, you've got a number of titles that take a look at some important feminist issues.
That's right. The nonfiction section has a Q&A with Deborah Scroggins, whose book Wanted Women describes 2 very different Muslim women. We also reviewed that book a couple weeks ago. And then it takes us to India with back-to-back reviews of Sonia Falero's Beautiful Thing and Catherine Boo's Behind the Beautiful Forevers, which respectively examine the sex trade and the slums in Mumbai.
Well, finally, it's a really global issue at Publishers Weekly this week. The Soapbox has something to do with India, too.
Yes, Varanasi bookshop owner Rakesh Kumar Singh gives us a really beautiful, poetic look at the ways bookselling in India has changed over the past 20 years. And elsewhere in the magazine, we have a lovely profile of novelist Maria Duenas.
Well, Rose Fox, thank you for that world tour of this week's reviews section. Rose Fox is a PW Reviews editor who blogs at Genreville, and thanks as always for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Glad to be here.
Well, you know, a show that's had us hopping around the world chatting with Rose Fox in New York City and as well Andrew Albany's PW's Features Editor, still there on the line with us from Frankfurt. Andrew, we hope you have a great trip back and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Chris. It's almost 6 o'clock here and it's time to go to a beer hall.
Well, absolutely. But we're still working here in the East Coast, so we'll have to wait for our beer later on. Every week, Beyond the Book, we'll speak with the editors and reporters of Publishers Weekly for an early look at the news that publishers, editors, authors, agents, and librarians will all be talking about when they return to work on Monday. So do check us out. It's this special feature every Friday. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, like Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, copyright.com/beyondthebook. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Chris Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.